Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show! Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie-related. I'm your host, Hugh Hefner. Just kidding, it's a shiny suit. My name's Ben Bateman. I am joined today my lovely co-host, not in a shiny suit. He's dressed like a regular person today.
Like a normal person. Like, yeah. You can look at me and talk to me at the same time.
And you don't. It's like
it's
reflective.
Like blinding. Right. Yeah. Yeah. What's up, guys? I'm back. Andrew Guy. Happy to be here. I love this movie. And I almost love more that, like, you hadn't seen this movie.
I'd never seen The Patriot.
And we watched it. I was very drunk when we watched it. And it just made it that much better.
I'm just going to be honest. I was drinking.
Quite a bit.
This was amazing. I really, really enjoyed this movie. I'm just putting my phone down here so we don't buzz. Sure. And this was one of the most entertaining first-time experiences watching an action movie I've ever had. Like, in the way that Gladiator was the Oscar-winning version of this type of movie,
right.
This is the one that tried and failed on every level to win Oscars.
Right.
And is just sweet. It's, yeah, like, so ridiculous and, like, so over the top, but, like, super entertaining.
Yeah, incredibly well acted, really well shot.
Yeah.
And the music is, like, exactly what you want, like, uplifting and then sad and melancholy. Yeah. And, yeah, me watching you watch this movie was also a phenomenal experience. Because yes. I knew it. I knew what this movie is our genre.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
This is like one of those movies where if you're like, what's your show about? I'm like, you know how it feels when you watch The Patriot?
Right.
That's what our show is.
Yeah, 100%.
This is like what it feels like to watch The Rock. It's like the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as good, but it's right. Like this totally the same kind of deal. So anyway, guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. We talk about action movies on the show. We do movies that sort of basically adhere to four kind of rules. And the deal is, as well as being made after 1981, the four rules are rule number one, that the hero always plays by their own rules. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people or things in the room. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. When we say political, it means they could either be the man or work for the man. So, like, if you're an MTA operator in the Potemkin film 1, 2, 3,
you just gotta stop referencing that movie.
And rule number four, the movie contains at least one explosion. So this one totally, I think, just executed on every level, right?
Nail on the head. It's perfect.
Like, Benjamin Martin is 100% his own rules. He's
absolutely.
Like, he's the man. He does what he wants. He fights with a freaking tomahawk.
He's the ghost.
Yes. Rule number two, he and Jason Isaacs, really, he and Tom Wilkinson are the smartest guys in the room,
right,
at all times. They're like brilliant military commanders.
Mm-hmm.
Rule number three, he's military. He's military. And then rule number four, it's filled with explosions.
Just tons of them.
Of emotion and blood.
Yes, lots of emotional explosions in this movie. Like, this movie has so many cheap pulls at heartstrings.
Yeah, totally.
But it's executed perfectly.
Yeah, so we're going to show the trailer right now to this
sweet
movie. Aside from, yeah, we'll watch the trailer and we'll get some other stuff.
Okay, so right, I'm into it. This is a great trailer.
Yeah, it's very good. It's like super, super like 90s like...
He swore he'd put the past behind him.
A past he wanted to forget.
Yeah, that's like, yeah.
I have no desire to do so again. I have seven children. I do not wish to leave them fatherless.
A family threatened by war.
We have to do something.
I forbid you to go.
Not a child. You're my child.
A son fighting for his belief.
This is one of those movies where I almost like the trailer as much as I like the movie.
Yeah, no,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
You even, I think in the trailer you even have the slow-mo of Heath Ledger flipping the knife.
Colonel, yeah. I beg you, by the rules of war.
Would you like a lesson, sir, in the rules of war?
The rules
of
war. So evil.
Would you like a lesson, sir?
So good.
Oh, look at his face.
Yeah, he's so evil.
And it's because Gibson's so crazy, when he says that, it holds even more weight in real
absolutely
life.
Absolutely.
When I request
sir, that you transfer my son here under my command.
Like a lot of slow-mo, a lot of unnecessary,
tons of like slow-mo throws and catches, slow-mo,
like
and
yeah,
clips.
Gun catches and.
Ooh, fireworks! Lovely.
Yeah.
How many were there?
Maybe one.
One man. Sounds more like a ghost than a man.
Bring me this ghost.
Ghost, bring him to me.
How many men does Cornwallis have under his command?
12,000 redcoats.
I'm here to enlist every man willing. Who's with us?
This is not the conduct of a gentleman.
This is...
I'll take that as a compliment.
This so is like a movie that I just... I wish that I had watched this as a kid.
Oh, dude, I loved watching this movie as a kid. It was incredibly awesome.
Because my level of commitment to this movie is already extremely high, and...
Oh, dude, shut up. Listen to this.
I'm just joking. No, totally. You're dead on. Oh, he's crying. He's revenge. Ledger's so handsome.
Wow, this is a very... very good trailer.
It's great.
I want to go watch the movie again.
I know! That's how I feel. You should see the look on my face when I was watching this trailer and I was pulling it for media for for the thing. I was just like, God, this is so sweet. This war ends today.
Oh. Love it.
Really
oh,
good.
My gosh.
Really good trailer.
One of the best trailers we've seen, like, around the 2000s and pre.
Well, because this era is so bad for trailers. Yeah. We've talked about it before.
Yep.
Like, that's a really good one.
That's like one you'd see today.
Yeah. So before we get into this, guys, we are here on the Popcorn Talk Network, and obviously we're incredibly grateful to be on this network because we love it, and they just let us do the show that we want to do.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of other shows on this network you should check out if you like what we do. The sort of sister podcast to us is... Anatomy of a movie. Sorry, blank for a second. Anatomy of a Movie. They go live on Fridays, and they do like the current movies of the week, whatever's coming out. So check them out. They stream on Fridays. There's some other new shows as well. There's like Video Game Movie Anatomy, which is pretty cool.
Disney Movie News.
There's Disney Movie News. If you like Marvel and DC, they have like DC Movie News, Marvel Movie News. So check those shows out. Popcorn Talk is full of awesome stuff. If you want to follow us or the Action Movie Twitter, we now have one. It's at AMA Podcast, and we respond and interact with everybody. It's a great place to sort of like share your recast or your opinions, the things we're talking about here.
Yeah, we have like cool polls that we do during the week to like get you caught up and like thinking about the movie, things like that.
For sure. Our personal Twitter is, Andrew, if they want to follow you, where can they find you?
You can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter.
And you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. Let's get into the next thing. This is a brand new thing we're adding to the show. This is really exciting. So when we were kids, we would go to the movie store, to the video store, the actual physical video store. Yeah. And there would be this thing where like VHS tapes, because this is in the days when we were watching movies like this. It was really just full of VHS tapes. Like DVDs were out.
There was like VHS tapes and laser discs.
And there's a little section for DVDs because they were just starting to come out. But basically, the whole entire movie store would be lined with these VHS tapes, and they'd be full of styrofoam.
Yep.
Because if it fell off, like they'd just easily put it back up. They didn't want the video to break. And then like a little like you know several copies of the VHS video next to it. So every one of these movies would have like a critical tagline.
Yeah.
You know,
at the very top in quotes.
Yeah. It's like a pulse pounding adrenaline thrill ride or like a slam bang action thriller. And like as kids, we'd look and be like, oh, this is so exciting.
Yeah.
And so Andrew and I were thinking, like, what if we were to come up with our own tagline to put on the VHS box for a movie? Because this feels like that movie. And so we each kind of came up with one that we thought was good. This will be the first time we try this. This is going to be called Action Movie Tagline. So if you guys come up with one of your own and you think it's funny, leave it in the comments or tweet at us, you know, be as creative as you want.
Can you believe they let us do this?
I do. What's your action movie tagline?
All right. A heart-wrenching, pulse-pounding, revolutionary roller coaster from the director of Godzilla, William Wallace is Benjamin Martin.
I thought you were going to say
in The Patriot.
I thought you were going to say William Wallace is Godzilla.
Is Godzilla.
I like it. Your use of the word revolutionary is extremely clever in this context.
I just thought of that word, and I was like, I need to put it in. I thought 30 minutes of a word that went with it.
It's what's missing from mine, because it's not a revolutionary movie at all, because it's clearly just ripping off Braveheart 5 years later. But the fact that it's about the Revolutionary War just makes it all the better.
Yeah.
It's, like, so clever. It's like, it's a double entendre.
It is. I don't know if you know what that means.
It's pronounced pendulum.
All
right, guys. I went with... Gibson's rage is only equaled by Isaac's ruthless cunning in this emotional bloodbath, action-packed. No, that's out of order, but in this emotional action-packed bloodbath is what
that's
I was going
good.
For.
I like that.
I think yours is better, but I still enjoyed that.
I just like doing it.
It's very fun. Yeah. So if you guys like Action Movie Tagline, let us know. I think it's something we might add to the show.
I think Peter Travers would be proud of us.
I hope so. We should tweet at him.
We should.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into thesis statements. So this is like the thing we do every week, guys. We sort of construct an idea about the movie. It should be, you know, pretty rooted in something like almost like hyperbole. It should be very definite. This is not something that's supposed to be, this is my favorite, this role, or like such and such did a good job in this. It's like, this is the first time this ever happened, or this is the greatest this, or right. This is the lost this, and it should be like very definite. So we each have one. What is yours?
Mine is that this is without a doubt, and especially because I had, you know, we went and did the research on this movie, this is Roland Emmerich's best movie by far.
It's not saying much.
It's not saying much. And it, at first I was like, really, his best movie, The Patriot, Mel Gibson? I was like, no, there's got to be something better. And I went through and I looked. There's nothing even close.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess the closest thing could maybe be Independence Day.
And we'll get to that when we get to Emmerich, because we're going to do another little segment there. But I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I think it's very smart, and I think if you were to ask most people, well, this is what happens. I think with most people, if you say the name Roland Emmerich, if it's a movie person, most people go, oh, yeah, he's a good director.
Right.
What that means is he's made a lot of movies that make a lot of money. Yes. So if you're a Hollywood person, you regard him as like a successful director.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a classic example of a guy where he's not actually a good director.
No, he's really not, and I think he just knows how to eye candy things.
Yeah, maybe he's a good director. I shouldn't say that because I'm not a director and I don't know that much about the guy. But I would say he doesn't make good movies. His movies aren't actually good. They're like entertaining at best. Though this movie is very entertaining, and I would definitely call this a good movie.
Yeah,
but in its own way. So I would say, and this isn't sort of in reference to my tagline.
Okay.
This is the ultimate lost hero-villain pairing from an action movie. It's the most forgotten, greatest. It is the greatest forgotten hero-villain pair I've ever seen. Because Gibson is fan-fucking-tastic in this movie. Like, he's great.
Yeah.
He's very entertaining. It's prime Gibson, too.
Oh, it is. I mean, he's got the same conviction that Wallace has.
Yeah.
Like, he's so intense.
Yeah, because he was going for an Oscar with this movie. He was trying to recreate it, so he was really invested. You know, it's not like... Like, it's clearly Emmerich's best movie in the sense that he gets a lot of opportunities to pull at the heartstrings. There's good action.
Right.
He's a great lead character.
It's shot incredibly well.
Yeah. But then the beauty of it is that Isaacs, he's one of those villains that's...
He's so good.
And he's so one-sided, too. It's like he's not... It's kind of like the... It's exactly like the in Shawshank Redemption, the warden.
Right.
He's, like, so evil. He's, like, one-sidedly evil. There's nothing redeeming. There's only one scene in this entire movie where Isaacs even has a moment where you're supposed to understand
him. Like, he's not just a killing robot.
Yeah, where Wilkinson says something about, like, where you come from and your family's money.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay, silver spoon, and he's got a chip on his shoulder. That's it. Otherwise, he's just a guy who kills people. He kills sons.
Yeah, relentless. He'll kill children. He burns families in churches. Like, this dude is evil.
Yeah, he's got flowing hair. He shaves
so
in the swamp.
Flowing.
Yeah, he's anyway. So that's. I think this is just the ultimate forgotten hero villain pairing because I loved both.
Yeah,
and I have a feeling both of these guys are going to make my list. And this is the first time I saw this movie. That's crazy.
I know. And they are both going to make the list because they're both so good and the stakes are so high.
Gibson's rage is only equaled by Isaac's ruthless cunning in this emotional action-packed bloodbath.
Yeah, we heard it the first time.
I just was excited. Was thinking about it again. So I almost feel like we should just like voice over them. And instead of saying them, we should voice over them.
We should make voiceovers.
With like a great soundtrack behind it. And then we should cue it when we do this section instead.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't let me forget that.
Let's just pause the show and make a note real quick.
okay, let's do fist pump moment. So this is the thing. If you guys watch the show, you know exactly what this is. And you know I'm going to get really overexcited explaining it to you. So what this is that moment where you are watching the movie and something happens and you're kind of like look around and you're like...
Yeah.
This is so awesome. Is anybody else seeing this right now? I get to watch the rest of this movie. Yes! You might even like pause it and call your friend to be like, look, I'm watching The Patriot right now.
That's Ben's phone voice, by the way. Okay, I'm watching a movie.
Look, Andrew, I'm watching a movie and I need you to talk to me. I'm at work. I need to talk to you. This is important.
It's happened a lot.
That's a real thing. it's a page from our life. So we are going to share our fist pump moments.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you go first because we have video pulled of a long scene.
Okay.
That's mine. And I hope we don't have the same scene.
There's many fist pump moments in this movie. Like, the one from the trailer is like, I will kill you before the end of this war.
Yeah.
It's great. But I think for me, my fist pump moment has to be... It's got to be the beginning Tomahawk fight. Like, as a kid watching that, it was so good. And it was so intense. And, like, you see him, he's like... calm and collected, and then he goes into battle mode, and then, like, it snaps.
Yeah.
Like, these people just killed my kid.
You know what? Let's, we actually have the Tomahawk fight. We can cue it.
That? Okay, yeah.
Well, because we're actually, the two video clips that I pulled are our fist pump moments.
Oh, really?
So we'll just do an extended fist pump this week.
Sure.
Because they're longer clips, and we'll just play the Tomahawk fight, because it's really sweet. So, and my favorite line even relates to this, but we're going to get into that later.
Okay.
But it's, they don't show it in this section. It's actually what happens right before this fight. But, like...
Oh, it's blood.
Yeah. Because they've, like, captured Ledger, and you're like, there's no way he's going to... Because Gibson's already watched one of his sons get mowed down.
Yeah, there's no way you're taking another one.
No, there's not even a chance. So Gibson's just like, I'm a better shot than all of you, because I'm the smartest guy in the room.
Yep.
Even my children are better shots than all of you soldiers, because
aim
they're
small,
my children.
Miss small. So I guess when they were on set, the guy that was teaching Ledger and Gibson to shoot the muskets, he told them that. He was like, aim small, miss small. If you aim for a man, you can miss the man. But if you aim for the button, you'll hit, and you'll miss the button, but you still hit the man.
Ah.
So that's why he's like, he liked that so much when he was getting taught. He's like, put that in the movie. Like, I'm going to put that line in the movie.
Did he, this is maybe my favorite moment, when he jumps out from behind the tree for a second.
That's my favorite. It's so crazy. It's crazy Gibson.
That nightmares are made of.
This is like so amazing. Ledger saves him. Oh, and then, like, dude, when I was a kid, I went out and got, like, because you know how they had, like, those cowboys and Indians and cops and robbers, like, toy sets?
Right.
I went and got the Indian one because it had a tomahawk and a knife in it.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
I would go around and just, like,
terrorize your sisters.
I didn't have any brothers or sisters. My sisters are all much older, so I would just fight ghosts in my house, basically.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's so good. He's so intense. And then, do we see the...
I hope so. If not, I'm definitely going to make the sound that he makes. Because that was the end of my fist pump moment, was the sound.
This movie is... The other thing about this movie is it's so grotesquely violent.
It is.
It's like, really, really, really intense. Like,
When they cut to the camp and then, like, all the limbs are cut off and all that, and...
I was explaining to our producer, Steven. I was like, we're doing The Patriot this week. He was like, oh, wow. I was like, it's just hilariously awesome. And he was like... It's really depressing. I was like, no, it's just awesome. He's like, they burn his family alive. I was like, no, you're missing the point.
It leads to an end.
He like one-shots the guy's skull with a tomahawk.
That's the equivalent of a hostage headshot in the 1700s.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Here we go. Yes. This is the part. He throws the tomahawk again, which I love.
Guy's a coward. Not Benjamin Martin, though.
And then he, and then
oh,
he goes
we don't get
and
to
he
see it.
Butchers him.
Yeah.
And he hacks him into pieces.
What's the sound that he makes? Over and over
like
again.
Blood flying, hair flying.
It's so violent.
So gnarly. Yeah.
Okay, I want to cue the other one, because the other one's my fist pump moment. And like my scene is more emotional.
Yes.
But I'll tell you, we don't even need to necessarily watch the whole scene. Like, I can cut it like a minute before the end
of
it.
Oh, yeah, because it's all about the beginning.
Yeah, because the Ledger death's not even the thing that I like the most.
No, it's sad.
Yeah, it's sad. All right, let's cue this up. So I just have this thing about Jason Isaacs in this movie.
Uh-huh.
I'm convinced that he's the best part of the whole movie. Like, I really am.
Oh, yeah.
He's just the most entertaining. And what you see right here, so it's like the burning, and it's like Ledger's lost his family. He's so angry. He's like, I'm going to take it out. And right here, Isaac's hair is down. He's in the swamp. He's like, I'm going to be shaving.
I will be clean cut on the battlefield.
I'm going to be clean cut on the battlefield and ready to take on anybody. He's got a little mirror. Like, it's so good.
So good.
The beauty is that, like, in his most cunning and ruthless scene, his hair is down.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's clean shaven. Call to arms! What do they say? Arms. To arms! To arms!
That guy, like, looked like he was waiting to deliver his line for so long.
Yeah.
He's like, this is it. This is my moment.
Tavington.
That's right. Use your arm.
Yeah.
Slow-mo. Slow-mo
run. So much slow-mo. I mean, this is like a damn John Woo movie. It's like, what's better slow-mo? Like, it's like, I can't decide what I like more. Do I like Tavington slow-mo? Or do I like the Nick Cage getting out of the car with the doves and like the slow-mo like jacket and
right,
face-off?
Right.
I'm not sure which one's better.
I love that the best people in the movie are the lead characters, Gibson and Tavington. They never miss.
Yeah, of course not.
No.
They're total badass. Yeah,
you only get one shot.
That's my that's the moment right there.
Which one?
When he takes the gun out? He takes the gun out and he flips it over in slow-mo.
Right, right.
Yeah. That's the moment right there. And he's like, okay, we're gonna see right here. Here it is.
There it is.
Oh,
I'm
going to
hit you with this.
Yeah, I'm not even going to shoot it. All right, that's enough.
Yeah, you can cut it.
Drop the mic. So that's my fist pump moment, 100%.
So yeah. My other one is when Mel Gibson just completely murders the horse that he's riding on with the American flag.
Uh-huh.
That part's gnarly.
Yeah.
The horse's neck breaks and all that.
This movie's so sweet.
God, I love it. All right.
All right, enough of us getting excited. So let's continue going. One last reminder, we're on iTunes as well, guys. We do the YouTube show. And you guys have been extremely kind to us on YouTube. We're getting like 11,000 views a day right now on the show.
I don't know why you guys like us that much, but I love that you do.
Well, it's crazy to me. Like, with the newer episodes, like, we get comments, we interact with you guys, but then the old ones, we seem to have this new audience that's finding them, because a lot of the original episodes are soaring right now, and it's really a lot of fun to interact with people who are just finding them now, so check out some of those, some favorites. Predator was a lot of fun. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, Looper is one of my favorites.
The Mission Impossible 3 episode was a lot of fun.
Yes, that was good.
We're going to do a clip show at some point, actually, where we pull some of the best moments from those shows, but...
We've got exciting things coming on the horizon with our show. Let's just put it that way.
We're very committed to action movies, but let's get into it. Find us on iTunes, review us, rate us. We do this show out of the kindness of our hearts. It helps to keep the lights on if you guys rate and review, and we can't do the show in the dark. So please let us know what you think. Let's get into Star Breakdowns.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about Mel Gibson. This is like pre-Gibson exile.
Yes.
This is like, so he, in 04, he hits the, that's when all the anti-Semitism, getting drunk, like sugar tits with the cop, that whole thing.
He lost it.
Totally lost it.
Yeah.
This is even worse than the Cruise exile. This is like...
Oh, this is, yeah, because this was like racist and hateful and,
yeah.
And he was just stupid. Ignorant.
Cruise, it's like there's a perception that people have of it that it's longer than it was. It's a bad thing. Like, it was 5 or 6 years, but
right.
He still made movies in there. Gibson literally was in We Were Soldiers in 02, and then he was in Singing Detective in 03, and then he doesn't make another movie until... He has a small part in Paparazzi in 04, but really, he's not in another movie until Edge of Darkness in 2010.
Well, yeah, I mean,
seven years.
You go, he had a small part in Paparazzi. You're talking Mel Gibson,
yeah.
A-list, biggest of the biggest.
I think he was like a producer on the movie, so he did like a small part. I mean, he was directing in there, but like his exile as an actor was extreme. And he hasn't really returned because...
It's hard to watch the dude and want to enjoy him now.
Yeah, yeah. He was in Expendables 3, I think he showed up.
Which is so weird because you can watch his old things like this and like Braveheart before it happened. You're like, I still love it. But then it's like, oh, this movie's coming out, The Beaver or whatever. I'm like, eh.
Yeah, it's weird. But, I mean, he could still return. He's a great actor.
He is a great actor,
So, but prior to this movie, he was really on a hot streak. Like, so Gibson's original movie, I want to say, is Gallipoli in 81. Peter Weir's movie.
Okay.
And then he's got that run with, like, we covered it with Mad Max, where he did the three Mad Max movies in the 80s, the Lethal Weapon movies. Mm-hmm. He's in all those movies, Payback, Ransom, he's in... like Executive Decision, Conspiracy Theory. Yeah. He's in another Peter Weir movie, I think The Mosquito Coast.
I don't know that one.
But all that stuff in the 80s, like, he had a great run there for about 20 years.
20-year run.
Yeah.
Solid. I mean, even
Braveheart, obviously.
Yeah. Even into, like, What Women Want. That movie was very successful.
Yeah.
Like, that's 2003, I think, right?
Maybe. Oh, no, it's the same year. It's 2000.
It's is it 2000? Okay, yeah, so yeah. So that's, you know, it's about a 20-year run that he goes on where he's just... The man.
100%.
Yeah.
He at one point, he was people's sexiest man alive. People love him.
Chicken Run made a lot of money, I believe.
Or did I read that he was the first people's sexiest man alive? I think I did. I think he was the very first
ever?
One in 85. Yeah, I think I read that.
Huh.
Correct me if I'm wrong on that. That's definitely a stat. We should have a stat guy. Stat guy, can you pull the what? Just kidding.
People's Magazine's sexiest man alive.
Can we just get the full list of people's sexiest man alive?
David Beckham just won.
That's enough, okay? We shouldn't know that sort of thing. Let's get to talk about actually these movies. So Chicken Run came out the same year.
Yep.
I remember the trailer.
I saw it in theaters.
Even the chicken that he played had swagger.
Oh, God.
So much swagger.
Sexy chicken.
No, it really was.
It was. No, he was a badass.
Yeah.
He was like a badass chicken.
Right.
A revolutionary chicken, if you will.
Prior to that was Payback in 99, which is often confused with Ransom.
Right. The same movie.
Yeah.
They're not, but yeah.
Just like your 90s throwaway action movie. We can easily do Payback on the show.
Yeah,
totally. Or Ransom. They're both total movies that could be done here. And then Lethal Weapon 4 in 98, which is...
My favorite of the Lethal Weapon series.
But you like this movie more.
Yes.
And Braveheart, those are the three for you?
For Gibson?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah?
I think so, yeah. Those are probably my three favorites. I mean, Braveheart's definitely my favorite, and then The Patriot. And then I'd have to maybe look into the rest of his movies.
Yeah.
But I do love Lethal Weapon 4, but it's because of Jet Li. He's so awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that this is like, I would almost make the argument, except that Signs exists, and that movie made a lot of money.
Yeah, I do like Signs, but not in the same way as I like these movies.
Yeah, well, I was gonna make the argument that, like, this is the end of Gibson, because...
Mm-hmm.
But Signs is a couple years later, and then 03 is when it all goes to hell. So, I almost think that you could say that this is the last great movie that he made.
Right.
But then even calling this movie great is, like, And you would have to like really explain the context.
It's true.
To get anybody to understand what you're talking about. But yes, definitely this is interesting to watch because it's the end. I was sort of thinking about in recast, like the age he was when he played this movie. It's like he's old, but he's young.
Yeah, he's old enough to have seven kids in the 1700s, but have just been a war hero like maybe a decade ago.
He's like supposed to be 40.
No, it's more than
44
that.
Maybe?
Yeah, I think he's in his 40s.
Yeah?
Yeah. He's like, say early 40s.
He's kind of like a 90s stud.
We could probably do the math if we figured out the Revolutionary War and the time between what they were talking about earlier. I feel like they mentioned something, but I can't remember.
Yeah, so now, more interesting than that, though, is the fact that Heath Ledger, this is regarded as his breakthrough role.
Yeah.
Like, dramatically.
Yeah, it was the I'm not just an attractive, like, hunky young teen throb that he was in, like, even though he was, like, edgy in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
That was still like, okay, cool, you're a kid playing a kid in high school.
Yeah.
This was kind of that first time, like, he's very vulnerable, he's weak, he's got, his character has a range of emotions, he's endearing with his wife, he's just good. He's very good.
He is good. There were like a lot of young guys up for this role. It's a huge role.
Yeah.
It's a really big deal.
Gyllenhaal and him were the ones that like duped it out for the longest time.
Which is funny.
Yeah.
So prior to this, he really didn't have much. His first credited role is an Australian movie called Black Rock. That's 97. It's only a few years earlier. He had been in a bunch of Australian television, soap operas, TV, like he was working overseas. And Two Hands is a movie from 1999 that has Rose Byrne in it. It's another Australian film. Yeah. It's like some sort of like a gangster caper kind of a thing. Total indie. But that's the same year as 10 Things.
Right.
I mean, and then that's the next year is this movie.
And 10 Things is kind of a classic of our generation. Like, yeah, a lot of people our age just movie. Really love it. But yeah, and then he did this, and then he went on to do A Knight's Tale, and then like Ned Kelly, The Powers, like he just, or The Order, and then he just goes on a run. He becomes who we know him as.
Which is weird, right? Because it's one of those things where I remember when Heath Ledger died, and I remember getting the news, and you know, Joker hadn't come out yet, so he hadn't really been immortalized yet. Like he was that guy, kind of like Gosling is now, or like someone like that, where you're like he's basically like high B list, but so much potential.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was gonna say that because like the movies that come out after this, they're all good. Like Monsters Ball, he's weird and creepy in it, and he does a good job in everything. But still, when he was cast as the Joker, and I was one of them, I was not happy.
Yeah,
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This kid's 28 years old.
Because Brokeback was that movie that was like, not everyone saw it. It was an indie. It was Ang Lee. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, kind of controversial subject matter at the time. Yeah. You know, like I think it's a great movie, but a lot of people, he's phenomenal. He's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of people hadn't seen it. I wish I knew how to quit you. Then why don't you? Why don't you just leave me be? Okay. It's because of you, Jack.
This is really uncomfortable for me.
That was from Brokeback Mountain.
That's just Ben.
That was a treat for the audio listeners, I'll say that.
I'm sure it was.
That was a real treat.
The greatest impression of our generation. Dark Knight, obviously.
And then Dark Knight. But yeah, it's just like the time between him winning an Oscar for Brokeback Mountain. Mm-hmm. He won the Oscar.
For Brokeback? No.
No, he got nominated. Sorry.
Yes.
The time between his nomination for that and The Dark Knight coming out in 08 was only a couple years.
Yeah.
So, like, people were behind the eight ball on this guy. And I think when Dark Knight came out and, you know, he was up for it, then he won posthumously, it was one of those moments where people were just like, man, we really, really, really missed out on a guy that might have been the guy.
He definitely could have been, in the same way that we are going to miss out on Philip Seymour Hoffman for the rest of our times. Like these two people, I love Robin Williams, but he did so much. Like, don't get me wrong, I was devastated when Robin Williams died.
Devastated.
I love him.
Yeah. Gandolfini too.
Yeah, absolutely. But these guys, Williams and Gandolfini, and I mean, you can say the same thing for Hoffman.
Yeah.
But Hoffman was still on the rise. He wasn't slowing down at all.
Yeah.
Williams had kind of slowed down. Gandolfini had kind of slowed down. Ledger's literally at the beginning.
Yeah, he was the front end. He was 28, right?
Yeah. Philip C's in the middle, and then that's why losing those two guys is so hard, because their potential for what they could have done over the next, like, 30 years.
Yeah.
40 Hoffman years.
Getting into the next phase would have been crazy. But yeah, Ledger, like, it's if you think about sort of the way that DiCaprio has been, I think, invariably the guy for us, like, our generation, I guess you could make some arguments, but really it's like, he's the guy. Like, he's the handsome guy that started as a heartthrob, that swung around, that turned out to actually be talented, that made just great movie after great movie after great movie. Total faith in his ability. I think that Ledger could have been that guy.
Definitely.
He could have been the other one.
I think after The Dark Knight, if anything that he would have been in would have been gold, because everyone would have wanted to see him act.
Yeah, it's an ultimate tragedy. So we will miss you, Heath Ledger.
Yeah, rest in peace, brother.
He's so earnest and young in this film. Look at him. Look at those locks.
Blonde locks.
Those you lights the second time.
I love those blonde locks.
All right, so let's talk about a little bit of production development. We will talk about first Robert Rodat. So there were 17 drafts of this film written. And originally, they... it's such a morbid movie. So originally, he's supposed to have 6 children, and Ledger's wife, who is burned alive, was supposed to be pregnant.
I know.
When she's burned alive. But they were like, we just can't. So they gave Mel Gibson a 7th child who gets killed.
They needed one more kid in this movie.
Yeah. That scene is so dark.
It's gnarly.
It's like almost out of place the rest of the movie, because the rest of the movie, so much of it is unintentionally funny.
Mm-hmm. Even the guy that's a traitor is like, there's no honor in this.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really, really dark. But anyway, so Robert Rodat, he's a pretty well-known dude. Like, obviously, Saving Private Ryan is his biggest credit. That's the most famous one.
Yeah, I mean, writing that, you're pretty much set forever.
He wrote a film called Tall Tale, 1995.
That you haven't seen, but you convinced me you'd seen it because you know everything about Swayze.
Yeah, because he's like, Tall Tale? I was like, is that the film with Swayze in it? He's like, yeah. I was like, does he play Wild Pecos Bill? He's like, it says Pecos Bill here. I was like, I've never seen it. I just assumed that he's called Wild Pecos Bill. Flyaway Home, The Patriot, mm-hmm. and then he's still working. Like, he wrote the second Thor movie.
Yeah.
So he's definitely a guy that's...
He's working on Warcraft right now.
Oh, really?
That's big. It's gonna be real big.
The adaptation?
Yes. I'm so, like, I have this weird, like, relationship with World of Warcraft, because I used to play it so much, and I, like, got paid to play at one point, but it also, like, ruined my life. So I want to watch the movie, but at the same time, I'm just like, I just want nothing to do with it.
You're going to, like, just sit there in theater?
I'm going to play the game again.
Get, like, very drunk and just sweat in the theater?
Well, it's not based on World of Warcraft, it's just based on the original Warcraft games. So hopefully you won't get too terrible flashbacks.
All right, that's very good. That's even better for the story, because there's not really a story in World War. Anyway, not going to do this to myself on the air.
So that's the writer here. We have the director is Roland Emmerich, and this is what we said earlier. We were sort of talking about, like, just he's regarded as this guy that matters, but if you look at his actual filmography, it's kind of appalling. Like,
it's disgusting.
So if anybody who wants to know, we did Independence Day on the show, like, probably must have done it 3 or 4 months ago, and it was one of the few times that I've gone back to watch one of these movies that I really thought was a classic.
Uh-huh. And Independence Day.
You had the same feeling. It was just not good. It was, like, really hard to watch. Like, just not a good movie.
It's so crazy how someone being who they are in different eras is just appallingly unwatchable. And Will Smith being Will Smith as Will Smith in the 90s, I cannot do it anymore.
No.
Even with Bad Boys.
Nope.
I do like Bad Boys, and it's a little more balanced because it's, like, more of a comedy
action movie. About that, yeah.
This, him in Independence Day, it was literally unwatchable.
Yeah, I agree. It was really hard to watch. So, and we've gotten flack trying to explain that to people before.
Of course.
But if you go and you watch the episode, I think we break that down pretty clearly. But I was going
to
say...
And the other thing is, when you go and you tell people to watch that movie, it's about the same reaction. Like, actually sit down and legitimately watch it as a movie. Not turn it on in the background during the weekend of July 4th. Like, sit down for 2.5 hours and watch the movie.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Emmerich, for those that don't know, he's a German filmmaker. He's a screenwriter, producer. He does a lot of his own stuff. His movies have made more than $3 billion worldwide.
There you go.
Like, that's the real claim to fame, is the fact that he's just made a ton of money over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Are we watching some... Yeah, here we go. Welcome to Earth. Ugh, it's the worst.
Oh, no.
Welcome to Earth. Yeah. No, it's really bad. There's really a lot of really bad stuff in that movie.
Yeah.
Emmerich, he's like very well known for his disaster movies and blowing shit up. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what he does.
Like I said earlier on, he has appealing eye candy. Like, when the trailer for The Day After Tomorrow came out, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't even care if that movie sucks. It looks sweet.
2012 as well.
I did care that it sucked.
Yeah. It's, it's whatever. But so, okay, if you were going to top five, like...
Emmerich?
Yeah.
If I had to pick 5 movies of his that I would watch?
Because I got his movies written down here. I think I can pretty much rank them... Oh, God, it's the worst, though.
Okay, wait, I can do this. The Patriot, number one.
I agree.
Hands down.
That would be my one.
Independence Day, next.
It's embarrassing, but I agree. If you have the same number 3 as me, I'll be impressed.
Universal?
Yeah, Universal Soldier?
Yes!
That's a testament to how bad his movies are.
Really, because there's like 5 other movies in there that could be... So then, for me, after Universal Soldier, I gotta go... Day After Tomorrow.
I go Stargate.
Really?
Yeah, I like Stargate.
I don't remember Stargate at all, and I might get crucified by the audience for it.
It's, like, not great, but I mean,
right.
It's...
Neither is Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then for fifth, I just had to put White House down because I haven't seen it. And I've seen 10,000 BC and 2012 and
Day After Tomorrow. I skip all those. I went Godzilla.
And Godzilla, yeah, I was just
yeah, yeah. Broderick. I went Godzilla as my five.
Oh,
that's,
man.
Yeah.
What a great filmography.
What a fantastic filmography. Yeah. I didn't see 10,000 BC.
I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't see White House Down.
My only remembrance, like, because I don't really remember that movie at all. Yeah. But when it came out, I was working at Blockbuster Video, and, like, when movies come out that are supposed to be big, they get a lot of copies.
Of course.
They get, like, two walls full of copies. Yeah. And you go out, and what happens after a month, because they have a contract with the companies, they have to go and, like, kill all the discs. First of all, that wall was always full.
Yeah.
Never got rented. Secondly, I did not... I did not take my free copy home. It's just like, nope. I took home Deep Blue Sea and Blue Crush.
Ooh.
But I did not take home 10,000 BC.
Those are real good ones. I was thinking, like... like, one day if we have, like, sort of, like, a man cave that we do, like, other epic movie content, like, one entire wall would just be, like, copies of 10,000 BC. It's just, like, a wall of 10,000.
Like, why is that there? Why not?
Why not, man? It's cheaper than wallpaper. All right, so the producers on this movie, it's... With Emmerich's movies, it's, like, kind of a team. You have kind of two halves of it. So you have Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich. They have pretty much produced...
Yes, hold on. This is what I'm talking about. Our audience is, like... What we just talked about, like, really?
What?
They're that bad?
Yeah.
He's like, I had no idea those were all his movies.
Yeah.
They're all his movies. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. But The Patriot's so sweet.
So good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
No, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's, like, an incredible moment. Like, so yeah, there's kind of two halves of this. Like most of these movies, I say it every time, there's, like, a solid 12 producers credited on every movie.
Yep.
Like, anything that has this big of a budget, it's because you end up with some executive producers. You have regional producers. You have everywhere you're shooting. Like, there's different people who are in charge of different things. But there's always kind of a core group of, like, 3 to 5 on most of these who are kind of the people behind it. And you can usually track it if you look at, like... Usually what will happen is you'll look at their filmographies and there'll be like 3, 4, 5 movies in a row that they kind of all did together.
Right.
So it's kind of like a team.
I didn't really know that before, but that's kind of what happens in Hollywood is there's tons of these production teams that stick together through series and franchises. And
exactly. So Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich, that's like, this is like sort of their major, it's just in the middle of it. I'm fairly certain they did like 4 or 5 movies together. I think they even have a company together. I can't remember the name of it, like UTE maybe or something like that.
Sounds right.
And then the other half of it is you have Gary Levinson and Mark Gordon. So they're like the other major producers. They have worked on Day After Tomorrow and 2012, Grey's Anatomy Mark Gordon, I think. And then Saving Private Ryan, they both worked on.
Right.
That's the big one. So you could see like Robert Rodat wrote Saving Private Ryan, worked on this movie with them.
Right.
You know, everybody's connected.
Yeah, cool. I mean, yeah, production, it makes sense. I mean, the movie, that'll be perfect. We'll go right into our next topic, which is, you know, critical and box office.
Yep.
The money that they put up for this movie was $110 million in 2000. And that's got to just be those massive battle scenes, those epics.
Huge.
Like at the end, they had to reshoot them and stuff. I heard that filming that final battle scene, it was in the South, and it was like 110-degree weather, and they were dressed in these full, you know, full military gear, and the extras were just dying. Like, they were losing morale, and they were, like, unhappy and complaining. So Dean Devlin, while he's on set, he goes up to Gibson. He's like, hey, man, is there any way that you can give your speech from Braveheart to boost the morale of these people? And he still had it memorized 5 years later. He gets on a horse and he does it. He does it for all the extras, just for him. And I was shocked because I was like, I had that moment of like, really? Like, if I would, like, I thought Gibson would be like, really, dude?
Yeah.
You want me to like go and give a speech to the extras from a movie I did 5 years ago? But he was totally on board and it worked. Everyone was amped.
Well, I'll bet you, I'm just guessing this. This is something I should have written down, but... Is Gibson a producer on this movie?
I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I would be very surprised. I'm going to look that up really quickly.
Yeah, you look that up. I'll talk about the money. So this movie was Sony and Columbia collaboration. The budget was $110 million. It came out in June of 2000, June 28th. So it was a summer blockbuster.
Summer blockbuster.
That's exactly
time,
what they were trying to do with the movie. It didn't do well, unfortunately. Like, it did break even domestically, made $113 million domestically, but it only made $101 million worldwide. And that is surprising to me for the reason of Mel Gibson being who he was, a superstar, like, that's what we found with these worldwide numbers, is that superstars are superstars everywhere. And that's why these people watch these movies. Everywhere right. else is like, Mel Gibson's new movie? I'm watching it.
Totally.
You know? But maybe, I mean, I don't know, maybe people just don't care about the Revolutionary War in other parts of the world.
Well, this is what I would say. So first of all, he wasn't a producer. So that's really cool that he did that, because if you're thinking he's a guy that's behind it, like he's got some investment in the actual income right. of the film or anything like that, he really wants the... I'm sure he wanted the best movie he could get.
Right.
But when he's just talent as opposed to production, that's surprising. That's the kind of thing where it's like really, man, like you really
are
committed.
It's a Tom Cruise thing to do.
It's a Tom Cruise thing to do. Exactly.
Had to mention him somehow.
You want me to give my speech to these people right now? I'll do it. I will do it. Look, I'll do whatever it takes to make this the best film I can make it. Anyway, that's the way Tom Cruise would say it.
Right.
But so you were talking about worldwide and the perception. So I remember when this movie came out, and you know, 2000, I was 12 years old, and even at 12, it's like the whole concept of like the audience is smarter than the studios. Like mm-hmm. I saw the trailer, and I was like, this just feels kind of like they're trying to do Braveheart again.
Right.
And like,
for me, it was like, oh my God, they're doing Braveheart again.
I just was like, you know, I didn't grow up as a big Braveheart guy. Right. Like, I liked it. You know, I like it way more now, but it wasn't a movie that resonated. My older brother didn't make me watch it. Like, I loved Gladiator, but like, Braveheart wasn't important to me as a kid. So when I saw the trailer for this, I was like, well, they did it once and I don't really need to see this. And I just didn't. And I think the perception of the movie from a lot of people was just sort of like, it looks like they're trying to ram Braveheart 2 down my throat.
Right.
I don't really want to see this. So I'm not going to. And then the reviews were kind of mediocre. There is an interesting story about the reviews, though.
Yes, this was very interesting, and I wonder how much this happens now still.
Yeah, so there was a highly positive review by a critic named David Manning from a small press called the Ridgefield Press in Connecticut. And basically, during the investigation of his review, this Newsweek reporter John Horn discovered that the newspaper had never actually heard of this guy. So what happened was, this guy worked for the studio, wrote a positive review. It wasn't a real review. Right. And it got exposed by essentially a reporter being like, the studio is just writing a fake review. Like, one of their employees is essentially...
That reporter is changing the world.
Yeah. So this is crazy. On August 3rd, 2005, Sony made an out-of-court settlement and agreed to refund $5 each to dissatisfied customers who saw this and four other films in American theaters as a result of Manning's reviews.
Right.
How crazy is that?
That's crazy. And it's $5 for a movie ticket is also crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You wonder if it's impossible to do now because it's so easy to track anything on the internet. Like in 2000, it was a lot harder. It's
right.
been 15 years. Like, you can type in my name. You can figure out like where I grew up, basically. You know what I mean? Like, so doing something like this would be like, his name doesn't have any, there's no credentials on him being in the press. Like, would it work? But I bet back then it happened a lot. And before then, I'm sure it happened even more.
Yeah, totally. It's like, I just was thinking about the way this movie was perceived. You know, once a movie, okay, great example. Mm-hmm. Exodus, Gods and Kings.
Right.
Right. Christian Bale, Joel Edgerton.
Just a bunch of white people
Scott,
in Egypt.
You know, huge epic. Like the definition of came and went.
Yes.
That movie is the definition of essentially like, there's enough money and star power behind this that the studios are going to make this the theatrical release. It's going to go to theaters and they're going to hope that people pay to see it.
Yeah.
But nobody did.
Nope.
And no one cared.
It was okay.
But now nowadays, like a movie like The Patriot, like if they had put all this money behind it, it's totally possible that you could see this at like Redbox and you'd be like, interesting. Was this a big deal or a small deal?
Right.
Because it's like, if it's not good, it's quite possible that it just doesn't ever get theatrical, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, this is obviously kind of a big deal when it came out because it's only 5 years after Braveheart. But
right.
the way that it was perceived and the money that it made and everything like that, it's not that surprising. I mean, The Perfect Storm opened at number one the same weekend.
And it almost doubled its money.
The Perfect Storm, guys.
Right.
Like, this is a war epic with Mel Gibson in the leading role 5 years after he won the Oscar for Braveheart.
Gibson and Clooney.
Clooney
going
and Wahlberg about a storm with, you know who else is in that film?
I do. Go ahead.
Diane Lane. God, I love Diane Lane.
The love of Ben's life.
I love her so much.
Diane, if you're watching, run.
Someday I'll meet you and I will smile at you and it'll make my life. That was a creepy thing to say.
Really weird, man. It's really weird.
It's getting weird over here, dude. Do you want me to do the Brokeback voice again?
Please, God, don't.
So
critically, that's what we're talking about. This movie was not received well. I mean, it's got a 7.1 on IMDb now.
Right.
So that's pretty irrelevant because I bet when this movie came out, it was probably a lot lower. you watch it 10 or 15 years later, and there's an endearing quality about it.
But this is our movie in a nutshell, because on Rotten Tomatoes, this is what always happens with our favorites.
Yep.
Okay, the audience score, or the top critics, all critics gave it 62%, which is, you know, 62 is not good. It's a D, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's not appalling, but it's not good. Top critics gave it a 48%. That's appalling.
That's appalling.
That means top critics were like, this movie sucked, but the audience score? 81%!
Yes, that's my fist pump moment right there.
It's so good.
This speaks volumes on our show and why this movie is our show.
What's which is like the famous, like our favorite one, where it's like Man on Fire, where it was like 31% by critics?
The critic score was just brutal.
And the audience was like over 80?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the same type of thing. And then Stephen Hunter from the Washington Post says, there's no majesty, no tragedy, no feeling here. It's all FX and costume and casting directors.
What?
Yeah. This movie tugs at every heartstring there is.
This movie is full of feeling. Papa, don't go!
Yeah, you got two dead sons. You got the guy leaving his daughter. You got the racial battle between the two soldiers.
Oh,
we
didn't even talk about him.
No, he's like, it's an honor to serve next to you. I'm serving this as a free man. Like, things like that. And then there's the guy who comes back. His wife and son are dead.
Right.
So he kills himself.
Uh-huh.
Like, this movie is really sad.
Who was the country star that I said the guy that the you said the racial battle between him and the other guy? Oh, Blake Shelton. I was like he's talking to Blake Shelton there. Like, it's this movie's sweet. Like, it's totally fucking sweet.
Yeah,
I know we keep saying that, but I'm blown away by
how
much.
If you guys don't want to watch this movie by the end of this episode, I'm blown away because I want to watch this movie again. I watched it twice in the last week.
The positive review we had from Roger Ebert was, I enjoyed the strength and conviction of Gibson's performance, the sweep of the battle scenes, and the absurdity of the British caricatures. Dead on. Dead on. We haven't even talked about Wilkinson.
Yeah. You dream, General.
Yeah. Wilkinson is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. Like, Wilkinson's one of the best actors of our time.
Damn him.
Yeah.
Damn that man.
Oh, God. It's so good.
Love him. He's so good. I love Tom Wilkinson. I love his role in Batman Begins. He's just great, and I need to see Michael Clayton.
Yeah, that's his best role. Yeah. And actually, in the bedroom, he's amazing in, too.
He's good in the bedroom.
The film in the bedroom?
You're weirding everyone out today, man.
Tom Wilkinson's good in the bedroom.
It's like another one of these things where it's like, if somebody was to be like, The Patriot got 3 Oscar nominations. I'm like, what, for like sound editing, costumes, and cinematography or something like that?
Yep.
Yeah, dead on.
Yeah, you're right. You're 100% right.
Visual effects or like makeup or something like that. You know, like, you spend enough money on a movie and you'll get some Oscar nominations.
Absolutely. Dude, we powered through that. Okay, so what, we're favorite line now?
Yeah, there's some very good ones.
Oh, there's so many good ones.
Yeah, excellent ones.
You go with your first one. I'm sure we could each do a couple.
Well, okay. So you referenced it already, before this war's over, I'm going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's my favorite line. I really like that line.
It's a good line.
There's a few. Okay,
that's almost more of a fist pump moment than it is a line. Yeah.
I think my two would be, I'll go first and you give me one just in case I don't step on one of yours.
Okay.
I would say that, like, I really, really enjoyed just before the Tomahawk battle when he's with his sons and he's saying to them, he's like, they're just so young. And he's giving them these rifles and he's like, I want you to start with the officers and work your way down. He's like, aim small, miss small.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, when your brother fires, I want you to reload your brother's rifle. And, you know, and they're like so scared.
Like, do you understand? He's like, yes, father. Yes, father.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, like, it's really good.
Oh, it got me on a lot of levels. Like, just the heartstrings and, like, I have a weakness for father-son moments. You know that?
Right.
So that one totally got me.
Yeah, that's good.
I also like when Gibson's like, ah! What's yours?
I think my two might be, and they come in order, is when he goes, kill me before the war is over, will you?
Yeah.
It appears you are not the better man. And then he swings around, stabs him in the stomach. He's like, my sons were better men. And then he shoves the bayonet through his throat. Oh my God, it's so good. And him dying.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same, it's like the same death that Commodus has in Gladiator.
Yeah.
Like the knife to the throat. And like, there's something that's so, like, intense about that moment. It's, like, such a brutal death, but there's no one out there that isn't cheering at that moment when he dies. So I think, actually, that might just be my favorite right there.
Okay, so then we are on to the other favorite line of mine, which is going to be, this was almost my fist pump moment, and this is, like, one of those silly things, but, like, it's another father-son thing. There's a lot of father-son stuff in this movie. I mean, it's, like, half the movie.
Yes, yeah.
I like when they're sitting there just before, when Ledger's, like, telling him that he's going to get married, and Ledger says something about, like, I don't know exactly what Ledger's line is, but Gibson looks at him and he's like, are you trying to tell me something? And he smiles, and then he's like, he's cutting this apple with his knife, mm-hmm. and he like starts smiling, laughing. He's like, want some apple? Yeah. And it's like, it's just one of those, like, it's such like a it's random endearing. Line, yeah. but it's like an endearing, real moment.
It's a, yeah, exactly. It's a very real moment.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Any others for you?
Nah, I'm going to stick with that one. I like that one a lot.
I like literally in the course of this moment just updated my recast, and I'm so much happier.
Oh, really?
I got both, dude. I got my hero and my villain just in a split second.
Well,
I had two that I wasn't happy with, and I just replaced them both.
I'm very happy with mine.
Okay, very,
very
good.
Very happy.
Let's get into hero villain ranking. This is a good one.
This is a very good
huge,
one.
Huge hero villain ranking. So we're going to start with your hero villain. I believe I have them up here on the screen.
Yeah, I got this. You know I'm blind, so I got to look at this piece of paper. Oh my gosh, man. I love Benjamin Martin. I've seen this movie more than almost every movie on this list, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen this movie a lot.
Benjamin Martin.
Benjamin Martin, I think, has to go for me.
Oh my god, don't do it. Don't put him there.
Dude, I'm doing it. I'm putting him
at 9. Don't do it.
Oh my god, I can't do it. I'm putting him at 6.
Ah, you're putting him ahead of James Bond, Casino Royale. He's better than Jason Bourne?
Yep.
He's behind Ripley, or you're moving Ripley?
He's behind Ripley. I still think Ripley's more of a badass.
So are you moving Ripley up?
I'm sorry. I'll put him at 7 then.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
That's intense.
Dude, he's so awesome.
He's really good.
I have long feared that my sins would return me.
And the consequence would be more than I could bear.
Villain? Tavington? Oh my god.
Tavington's gonna be higher for me.
It's one of those things, like, it's just like Philip C. in Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah.
You're so ruthless. You're so evil.
So cunning.
I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna put him at 6 as well. Or I guess he's actually 6. And I'm gonna move Agent Smith
down.
Nope, sorry. I'm going to go 7 and move Hans Gruber down. I know it's going to make you really sad.
You're going to move Hans Gruber down.
I give you the FBI.
Gentlemen, you wanted a miracle. I give you the FBI.
So I got number 7 for both of them. Oh my gosh.
It's very good.
I can't believe that.
Those are high. I mean, you love this movie.
I love this movie.
So let's take a look at mine here and see how we did. All right. Benjamin Martin. How much do I like Benjamin Martin?
Benjamin Martin, I'm in no mood for one of your lectures.
He's like right there with. He's better now. He's not. He's still better. Yeah, I'm gonna. He's just. I'm gonna say that he's just behind Riggs.
Just behind. Really? So you think that Benjamin Martin isn't as badass as Riggs?
I mean, the first Lethal Weapon Riggs is like really good. He's like very. He's super memorable. Maybe you might be right actually, but for the sake of argument, because I feel, even though I loved it, I still feel that. Tavington is the reason I like this movie so much.
Right.
I'm going to put him right behind Riggs. So I'm going to put Benjamin Martin at number 14.
I think that the two of them are perfect. Like, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, totally.
In this movie.
Okay, so my Tavington, though, this is because he's my favorite part of this whole movie.
Right, right.
I'm going to put Tavington at 6, ahead of the T-1000, behind Owen Davian.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's very good.
Because I don't think he's better than Davian. I just love Davian.
I do love Davian. But I liked Tavington because he's actually like physically threatening too. Like, this dude is a trained like commander.
I revise that. I'm gonna move Agent Smith and Davian up.
Okay.
They're gonna become 3 and 4. And I'm gonna put him at 5.
Okay.
So Tavington is going to be 5 for me. So I'm all I'm missing is a number 2.
I love it. I love it. You got your top 5 in.
Almost yeah. Yeah. Wow. Hans Gruber, Agent Smith, Owen Davian, Tavington. That's a killer top 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I already know where I'm going to put this movie. It was very easy for me to decide.
This is going to be an irrationally high ranking because you love this movie more than most.
I really do. I'm going to put it oh my gosh. It's hard for me to put it in front of Air Force One because I love Air Force One so much.
But they're so similar in
tone.
They're
so similar. I think I'm actually going to put it at number 7.
Okay.
And move Man on Fire and Live, Die, Repeat and Air Force One down.
Okay.
And put it right behind Looper.
So we're putting this movie at number 7 for
you. I put
you.
Everything at number 7 today.
Patriot goes number 7. Okay, I'm going to go... interesting. It's not as good as Gladiator, not as good as The Fugitive, not as good as Die Hard.
Really quick, someone just asked in live chat, is there any movie where the villain has ranked and the hero did not?
Definitely.
I think that's almost, happened a few times.
Yeah, I think almost positively. Let's see.
One example is Ben doesn't have... Oh, no, you do have Max Rocktansky on there.
Well, I think we have Ivan Khrushchev from Air Force One.
Ivan Khrushchev and the president's not on there. So it's definitely happened a few times. And again, I've said this before. I think that in these types of movies, in the movies that we do, having an incredibly strong villain is more important than having an incredibly strong hero.
Cyrus the Virus, Ryder from Taking Pelham 1-2-3.
There's on my list.
There's a note here. Ben thinks Samuel Gerard from The Fugitive is totally fucking sweet. Because we couldn't decide if he's a hero or a villain, but we definitely didn't put he's the only character that's even referenced.
Yeah, he's the only one that's mentioned.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's happened a few times.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, if a movie, if the villain ranks and the hero doesn't, the movie has to be super, super good. Because it's really hard to have one of these movies, like, rank for us without a great hero.
I mean, I think that when we do The Rock, I don't know if I'll put Nick Cage or Connery on there. No.
But definitely.
Yeah, he'll be top five. Hummel.
Oh, that's so crazy, dude. I'm just looking and I'm realizing he's going to be my number two.
Hummel.
That's what's missing.
I love it.
I'm just calling it right now.
Can't wait to do that episode.
Yeah. We're going to do an entire week for The Rock, by the way.
What does that mean?
So we're going to, like, this is like, it's going to be our 50th anniversary episode. I'm just calling it now.
Right.
So we're, this is like 30 or like 31
after we
right
do
now.
It for 50 years?
No, our 50th episode. I think this is episode 30, maybe.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Which is a bigger deal than we're even making
it out
to
that's
be.
Awesome. 30 episodes. We love you guys. We're so happy to keep, we have so much fun doing this show.
Yeah.
And preparing for the show and watching the movies that, like, it's not work at all.
No.
It's just...
I don't know if you can tell we're enjoying ourselves, but...
I'm sweating again, so I'm excited.
Yeah, that's going to probably be my two. But we're going to try to do a bunch of additional content. We're going to try to get all, like, as many of the actors from the movie in here as possible.
We're just going to stand outside Ed Harris's house until he calls the cops on us
exactly.
or comes out.
Exactly.
All right, rank the movie, man. Where are you at?
Oh, yeah. I have to finish deciding. It goes behind, but ahead, but behind... It's right in this range. It's going to be... Oh, man, that is tough. 14, 15? It's not better than Predator. 16.
16?
Yeah, it's better than Air Force One. It's better than Rogue Nation. It's not as good as Predator.
Okay. Another person just asked, where would you rank Gibson's performance among his previous films? And I think that...
Oh, in this movie?
No, just where would we rank his performance among his previous films, like with this movie and his other movies, I believe is the question.
Like, so like, where do we rank?
Like, if you're going to rank Gibson's heroes characters,
all
essentially,
time?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's one of those things where, like, as we do this show, it depends because obviously he's in 4 Lethal Weapons and he's in 3 Mad Maxes. So you kind of, if you're going to consolidate character, then the character of Riggs, the character of Max,
right?
You know, you have William Wallace, you have Benjamin Martin.
I think I'd probably have to go William Wallace, then Riggs, then Martin.
Yeah.
But since we've only done Lethal Weapon 1 and I have such a love for Lethal Weapon 4,
yeah,
that's why I put him ahead of Riggs number 1.
Yeah, maybe Max. I mean, but that's probably kind of the...
It's just so age for me, but I understand what it
yeah,
done, you know.
Totally. Oh, is it? Wait. Maverick? That's him. That's a sweet movie.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I love Maverick.
Yeah, Maverick's good.
Yeah. That's probably it. I mean, Martin's definitely... He's top five, though. Easy. Yeah. Top five, top three.
Oh, definitely.
Something like that. So, yeah, I would put it... It's just right behind Predator. I just have a hard time. I'm looking at all these movies that I like so much, and I'm like... I love Minority Report. I love Bourne. I love MI3. I love Men on Fire. I love Predator. The ones that are a little behind it, it's like, this is a better movie than... Oh, God, Speed. We need to redo these lists.
No, see, that's what I was going to say. What happens is you watch the movie 2 days before doing the show, and you're just amped.
Yeah.
You're so... It's like... And it doesn't make any sense. Like, when we look at the lists, and I'm sitting here, and I'm trying to make mine, and I'm like, really? I have this movie in front of it. So we will redo these lists, like, on an off day before we've watched the next week's movie and before we've done the next week's show, so that we're like it's even.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, like, such a bias when
totally.
We do that. But let's recast this movie.
Okay, yeah. So what we decided was that we were only going to do the main three roles.
Yeah.
And so guys, for those of you who are watching for the first time, or maybe you are old pros, maybe you're Brian Hurst. I don't know. We love you, Hurst. Every week we do a thing where we choose like several of the premier roles in the movie, and depending on when it was made, if it's a new movie, we go old movie, we go new. We just sort of recast it hypothetically, like if you were to remake this movie, and this is from 2000, so we were thinking if you were to make this movie again now, who would play the main roles? We were going to go with like more than just three deep. The problem is it's like the, you know, Wilkinson's great, Chris Cooper's great, Richardson, the chick, she's great.
They're just very replaceable.
Yeah.
And Wilkinson and Cooper could play those roles now.
Yeah, it's not so much like they're not as impactful as characters. So we decided Mel Gibson, Heath Ledger, and Jason Isaacs were the three characters we were going to go with recast. So let's start with Jason Isaacs.
You want to start with Isaacs?
Oh, yeah, let's start with Ledger.
Ledger?
Start with Ledger.
Okay. You go first. I'm sorry. Get at us at our Twitter, at AMA Podcast. We do this. We've done this 3 weeks in a row. Ben's won two. I've won one. Not happy about it. But, you know, after the show, tweet at us, hashtag Master Recaster, and let us know who you think did a better job and post yours, because we love reading them. We love seeing them. And they're usually better than ours.
Yes. Well, yes. but yes, I for Ledger, this is going to piss people off because people seem to not like this guy.
I know.
But I went with the younger Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Went with Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah.
And this was my defense of this. So I think Liam Hemsworth is fine. I haven't seen him be amazing in anything yet, but you know, he's young. He's like sort of, he's very young looking. He's kind of a heartthrob right now, just like Ledger was kind of becoming. Ledger's very good in this movie.
Right.
He does a good job. He's not asked to do that much.
Right. The character isn't incredibly deep.
No, it's, I mean, he's great at it, but it's like his earnestness and his youth. It's all sort of just who Ledger was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Liam could pull off that same thing. I don't think that Liam could do some of the things Ledger did later.
Right.
I just haven't seen that from him yet. But what I've seen from him is that he would be able to pull this role off, I think, very well.
Gotcha. I like that. It's not bad. I thought of him initially, but I ended up going with Nicholas Holt.
Okay, yeah.
And the reason that I did Nicholas Holt is because I think there's an innocence that he has that Hemsworth doesn't.
Right.
So like, it's something about him, like, I don't know if he's too handsome or too tall or whatever it may be. Ledger has that same quality. Like, yes, he's a heartthrob, but he's also like a very believable, like sweet, like innocent.
Right.
Just like trying. He just wants to make everyone proud and happy around him, you know? And watching Nicholas Holt in Mad Max Fury Road and that character.
Yeah.
Like that moment of when he got called mediocre by Joe and he's just heartbroken.
Right.
You know, I think he'd be great at it.
Nicholas Holt's fantastic. He's been a character, a notable character in a lot of movies I've really liked.
Yeah.
He is Nicolas Cage's son in The Weatherman, which is one of my
classic. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite dark comedies ever made.
Yeah, you love that. I love that movie as well.
Yeah, it's heavily underrated and he's really good in it. He's also
he's good as Beast.
Yeah, he's the kid in the Tom Ford movie. Is it A Single Man or is it A Quiet Man?
I think it's called.
With Colin Firth from like 2009 or something.
I think it's A Quiet Man. Is it Single? I don't know.
I think it's A Single Man. But anyway, he plays the student. He's a very good actor, and I like him a lot. So let's go with our
Isaacs.
Yeah.
I love my Isaacs pick. And guys, we both wanted to do Fassbender and Cumberbatch because it's just so easy.
Yeah,
and they both would be Fassbender would kill it.
Yeah, he's like Fassbender just comes to mind like immediately for me.
Right,
we just use him so much.
Yeah, so we tried to avoid him. I went with Daniel Craig.
What?
Yes,
Daniel Craig.
Oh, it's so good.
James Bond.
Yes, exactly. Because he's done. He's almost done being James Bond. So you remake the movie now, and he has this trait about him that Tavington has, and it's the same thing that Fassbender has. Is they have those dead eyes.
Yeah.
Those just like cold, ruthless, killing eyes, and you see it a lot in James Bond. He's got the accent. He's got the build. He is Tavington. I love that recast.
Like, interesting.
I think it's perfect.
I think it's a very creative recast.
Yeah.
This is my best move right here. So originally, I went with a bad choice, and I went Ewan McGregor, because there's something about Jason Isaacs in this movie. I'm not even kidding, guys. Watch The Patriot, and certain scenes, if he's talking, especially the one where he's talking to Wilkinson in the office, close your eyes and listen to him, and just picture that it's Ewan McGregor talking, and you'll be blown away. You'll be like, oh my god, he sounds just like him. He really does. But I decided not to go with that, because he's not.
Mm-hmm.
I went with Robert Englund.
Robert Englund, really?
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah, he's very evil.
Yeah.
He's crazy looking. For those of you that don't know, in 28 Weeks Later, he's like the dad at the beginning that's going crazy.
Is he Freddy?
Wait.
Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, that's Freddy Krueger, man.
Wait, who am I thinking of then?
Not him.
No, not Robert Englund. Damn it, what's the guy? Who's the guy I'm thinking of? 28 Weeks Later,
Brendan Gleeson?
No, not the big guy. Give me yours, and I'll pull up who I'm talking about.
Okay, so my Gibson recast.
Yeah.
I already did my Isaac. So my Gibson recast, this is perfect. Again, it's Hugh Jackman, man.
So good.
It's Hugh Jackman. I do a heartbeat. Like, what is the thing? He goes, no!
No! Like, sorry, that's on audio.
That was very loud. He's the perfect cast for it. He's got just enough crazy. He's got those crazy eyes, and I could just see him.
Robert Carlyle, not Robert Englund.
Oh, I know Robert Carlyle. Yeah, I love him. I'm a big fan of him.
Yeah, Carlyle would be friggin' great.
He'd be good. He's a very good actor, very good character actor. But yeah, man, Hugh Jackman to a T.
Yeah,
just no questions.
No, I love that guy so much. And that's so good. I ended up when I thought of Carlisle, it's because he's in the film Ravenous, mm-hmm. which is this weird movie from the 90s. You've seen Ravenous?
I haven't. I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
It's super weird. It's a cannibalism movie.
Yeah, right.
It's like it's this weird like horror period piece cannibalism thing where you eat people and you like gain their strength.
Mm-hmm.
And Carlisle's in it, and so is Guy Pearce, and. The soundtrack is done by one of the guys from Blur, and it's the creepiest soundtrack ever, but it's great. Anyway, I actually went with Guy Pearce for the lead role in this.
Interesting.
Yeah, it came to mind for me because I've seen him like be action-y before. I've also seen him be a great actor before.
Yeah, he's very intense. He's very good. My thing with Guy Pearce, and I almost recast him as my hero in something very recently.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was. He's got that face that you just kind of want to hit sometimes.
Yeah.
Like he's known for being like a condescending, like upper class, like
he dick. Almost could have been the bad guy.
He could be he'd be a better Tavington.
Isaacs, yeah.
Yeah, but he's good. I mean, I love Guy Pearce. I think he's a great actor. I just have this weird thing with him where I just don't think he can be a good guy.
Because
even in like Memento, he's like a good guy, but he's like not kind really of a good guy. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. All right, interesting. So let us know who you think won that one. Just for the record, it was Robert Carlyle, not Robert England, not Freddy. That's not who I was trying to recast.
What he wanted. I was like, when you first said it, I was like, what?
Cage versus Cruz. I don't know if there's any need for that today.
No, let's not do it. We've done a lot today.
Before this war is over. I'm going to kill you.
I like how we acknowledge that we're not going to do it. We look at each other and I see your eyes like glaze over.
You heard the Top Gun 2 rumors this morning?
No. What's
Kilmer
going on?
Apparently confirmed the offer role.
Yeah.
And then he redacted it.
Oh, really?
Said that he had jumped the Top Gun, but he was so excited about his conversation with his agent. So
why? I love Kilmer. Oh, he's so good.
He'll be in it. He'll be in it. It's the premise is that apparently like drones are now operating the airplanes, but they need them to come back for one more mission.
He's going to be operating a drone sitting behind a desk looking fat.
Yeah. I can think the headline I read was Val Kilmer confirms role in Top Gun. In other news, Eddie Lacy ate a sandwich or something like that. It's just like fat Kilmer with like a long hair.
I love it.
Just sweating. All right, well, let's talk about which of the three categories this movie fits into. So guys, there's three action movie categories in our opinion. There is totally legitimate, which is going to be that's like a bloodbath of No, sorry. totally legitimate movies like The Fugitive or, say, like Terminator 2, where they're very believable in the acting, the pacing. Everything about it is, like, it's dead on. Nothing about it really makes you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of a great movie. Classics. And then you have movies that are legitimately ridiculous, which is, like, the middle category. So it's kind of half legitimate but just half absurd. It makes you laugh unintentionally at times, but it has some very, very, very convincing roles. Usually at least one that could almost be like award worthy if it was in a different movie.
Right.
And then totally ridiculous are movies that's just like laughable. They're awesome. Commando, Con Air, Face Off. Like they're just absurd, but they're sweet.
Yeah.
So which of the three categories? You could make a strong argument, in my opinion, for any of them.
Any of them. You could literally put it in any category, and if you made a good enough point, you're right. But for me, personally, I put it in that pinnacle, the perfect category. It is ridiculously legitimately ridiculous. It is just believable enough. I mean, all the critics talk about it. Like, if you've read a history book or looked even closely at pictures of wars, this is not how it happens.
Not at all.
Damn that man. but yeah, I'm going to put it in the middle category.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
This movie is like the poster boy for ridiculous legitimate.
It is. I mean, this is like a new one we can use as our category, like, describer.
It's so dead on, just because it almost adds to it the fact that like they're burned alive in the church. It's like so
of course
it's so intensely out of place.
Everything is so heavy handed to like the all the heartstrings moments.
Papa
we're
don't
about.
Leave the machete battle. It's so cool, but it's so, laughable at times.
Yeah,
that's definitely. I mean, there's like a montage of like the militia like surprising the troops.
Yeah,
it's like behind a corner.
Ooh, you know, pop out of field.
Yeah, it's so awesome. So that is that. Now, before we sign off here, guys, we are going to be doing a movie next week that is so sweet. And this is The Pitch. Wow.
That was good.
We didn't even plan that.
No, we didn't. Wow. All right. I'm ready to do it.
Guys, next week. What? What are we doing?
Oh, are we not?
What?
I thought we were going to fight each other. I thought we were just going to fight each other on camera.
That was the pitch?
It's Rocky IV!
Okay.
I'm going to win.
He's an improviser, guys. Rocky IV next week. That's the movie. For those of you who are fans of sports or you listen to any kind of like Fox radio, Jason Smith, who is a Fox sports radio personality, is a friend of mine. He loves the Rocky franchise. Mm-hmm. He's going to be coming in here and doing that as a guest with us. Creed is coming out very soon. This is the film where Creed's dad dies. Yeah. It is so good.
It's heartbreaking.
You want to win the battle, Paul?
What did you say? These cats,
Ben just got struck by lightning.
Ben is having a stroke. So Rocky IV, it is arguably the best Rocky movie in everybody's opinion. It's the most entertaining Rocky movie. It's got freaking Drago. The soundtrack's incredible.
You will lose.
Yeah. If he dies, he dies.
Yeah.
This is like a pinnacle Rocky movie. Mm-hmm. And we're also going to be doing a watch-along.
Yes.
So guys, next Tuesday, we're going to be doing a watch-along.
At noon.
No. We're going to be doing a watch-along at 3 or 2:45.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Follow
okay.
our Twitter, at Anime Podcast, to know. We'll tweet, obviously, day of, but I'm fairly certain it's at 2:45.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a live watch-along of Rocky IV. You can watch it with us. Here we have to say. And then the next day, at 12:30, our normal time, we're going to be in here with Jason Smith to do Rocky IV. It is going to be the sweetest. I love that movie, and I can't wait to talk to you guys about it.
I love it.
Yeah, it's like this is a movie where it doesn't exactly fit our rules, but the tone is so dead on. It is just 100% our show.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing about Rocky IV that like doesn't feel like our show.
Like when we talk about it, like it doesn't fit any categories, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter at all.
Not at all.
It's like Tombstone. It's the same kind of deal.
Look, it's our show.
We can do whatever we want. That's that. That's the pitch.
Love it.
Another wonderful episode with you lovely people. Thank you so much for watching. Once again, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
Guys, I love it. I love you guys. I love the show. I'm so excited for Rocky IV. You can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter.
Yeah, and hit up the podcast, the podcast Twitter at AMA Podcast. Let us know who won Mastery Caster and what you think about Rocky IV. Any other questions you have, we will be sure to respond to you as quick as we can. We'll see you guys next week.
Boom.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners and principals.